You're listening to Thunder Quack Podcast Network.
What's up, nerds? It's time for another episode of the Thunder Quack Podcast, and this week it's Ghostapalooza. We are talking Ghostbusters, Frozen Empire, and basically nothing else. So let's get into it. Hello and welcome back to the Thunderquack Podcast. I am your host, Gary Gruberson, and joining me as always, the incorrigible Peter Venkman. Dr. Venkman?
Yeah, doctor. Listen, Mike.
Yeah.
I hate to set the tone, like, so we're really excited about this movie, but like, I just have something I really need to get off my chest. It's been brewing for a while. I have to be honest with you about something.
Okay.
It's just, your theories are the worst kind of popular tripe, okay? Your methods are really sloppy. Your conclusions are always highly questionable. I just think you're a poor podcaster, Dr. Cohen. And I think you have no place in this podcasting network or in this fandom, frankly. But I hope we can still talk about the movie and still have a good time today. That's fine.
We can. Listen, everybody, listen. I know that the word on the street is not necessarily going to vibe with what Joe and I are about to say, but let me tell you that never in my life have I felt that the critical response is more inaccurate. I mean, like the closest it's come is like John Carter, right? Like I'm still fighting that fight 12 years later. There is actually very little wrong with that movie. It's very, very good. This movie also, there's a lot of people saying a lot of stuff on the internet, and I find a couple of things. I find that there's a lot of sort of like hipster, like, oh, it's not as good as the original. So, okay, fine. I don't really think that that's a metric that we should be using. We'll get into that. And then the other thing that I am finding is that I don't think a lot of these reviews are legitimate, real reviews. I am noticing that many of the major outlets, if you go in to read their reviews, because I don't read reviews a lot because most of the time I just trust my own opinion. I care what I think. I care what, you know, people like you think, Joe, and some of the podcasters that I listen to and stuff, like Greg Miller, who's a huge Ghostbusters fan. Like, I care what he thinks. And I want to hear, you know, varied opinions and stuff. And I also want to hear dissenting opinions, because dissenting opinions often force me into a position where I now have to defend how I feel about it and examine it. And that usually leads to me having a better understanding of what vibed and what the reason why I love something. Right.
Mm-hmm.
I read a lot of reviews. I read probably about 7 or 8 reviews, which is about 7 or 8 more than I usually read for a movie. And I would say 90% of them read like AI gobbledygook. Like the I can't remember if it was Variety or Entertainment Weekly. I can't remember which one it was. I think it was Variety. It absolutely reads like pure nonsense. Like if you really look at it, it's like there are a bunch of like sort of like catchy sound bitey moments in it, surrounded by sentences to get you from one paragraph to the next. And that is just such a telltale sign of AI for me. And I'm going to admit something here, like, just let everybody know, because this is like a full disclosure sort of thing. I was using AI on Perfect 10 for a little while to like help me with the descriptions of like whatever it is we were talking about. I would use it as a starting point, right? Like I was using ChatGPT just to see if like I could get it into my workflow and help me like just, you know, I relieve some of the pressure of getting that much stuff done, which is, you know, kind of what the benefit of using AI would. But the more we learn about the environmental impact of these services, which is like massive and significant. And you know, like the more reliant I became on it, like the worse the stuff started getting. Like when I started, it was like, okay, here it is. And then I would do a lot of edits. And it would be like 10% of the AI thing would remain in it. And then with the last one that I did, I'm sure like it was like mostly the AI thing. And then I think actually it was one of the ones that you and I did together where like I was reading it and it was just like, I didn't even understand what I was saying.
It was a little hiccupy, yeah.
Yeah, and I had to do like major edits after the record, and I was like, you know what, this isn't working. So for the last two episodes, actually the last three, because Star Wars as well, I just wrote it myself. I just wrote it myself from scratch, and I it really didn't take that long, and it really wasn't that big of a deal. But I'm gonna say it right now that like basically since the beginning of this year, that like really since the relaunch, right? I guess so. That's February. I've kind of had like a zero AI policy for Thunderquack stuff. And that's going to kind of be the thing going forward is that Thunderquack is a no AI company. There are so many repercussions and there are so many things happening right now that I don't think that people are even aware of. And I think that this is one of those things. This is one of those unintended consequences of it, which is that like somebody goes to ChatGPT, writes a bullet point form version of their review, and then ChatGPT, which is sourcing all of its information from the internet, which we know is not a reliable source of human psychology, psyche, right? And then it is spitting back out absolute bile when what it should be is like a critical response, right? So I think that a lot of these reviews are actually being skewed by AI. That is my gut instinct. And I'm not like calling out any individual writers or anything like that. A lot of these places have actually like a lot of these outlets have put mandates in place of like of you will use these tools, we're paying for them sort of thing. So I don't think that it's by choice for everybody. I think that some critics are sort of being coerced more or less into using these tools. But yeah, I really found like once I'd read like two or three and started to notice these patterns in the way that they were written, I was like, I have to see this through and read a bunch more. And so like, just everything that I was reading was just like, it's just, like I said, it's like, they're like one liners. It's like, oh, I don't even know off the top of my head, you know, they're like the sort of like, you know, Siskel and Ebert, Leonard Maltin, like, you know, I sort of like Frozen Empire, more like Frozen Dumbpire, you know what I mean, you guys know what I'm talking about, where they try and like spin like a phrase or like ham fist a really bad pun in there. So there was like stuff like that, and then just sentences that are basically like data dumps, which to me is like the telltale sign of AI, of ChatGPT in particular, which is just like, you'll ask it something and it will just give you a data dump. And the data dump is, it might be relevant, it might not. And it really doesn't, like, there's no flow to it. It's just like, this is just a bunch of information. So it's like actors' names and their character names and like locations and stuff. And it's just, that really was like how a lot of them were reading to me. Mm-hmm. So maybe I have a tinfoil hat on, maybe I'm going crazy, but I really, really feel like this is a thing that is happening. I mean, like, I am not alone in feeling the effect of AI on my financial situation, because, you know, like, it was a major contributor to me being laid off, and it's been the marketing and copywriting has been hit really, really hard by it, and there have been a lot of layoffs in the last 8 months in journalism, particularly entertainment journalism, because entertainment journalism is not really seen as journalism. It's seen as a commodity, right? So these companies, I think, are trying to streamline their processes. And what that means is that they're relying on a lot of AI nonsense to do that. So yeah, everybody that I have talked to, this is one of the other things that supports it, is like, my entire Twitter feed of human beings is like, I loved it. It was great. I had a fun time. Fun movie. Really funny. Great characters. Like cool bad guy. Like, people have all sorts of great things to say about this movie. And does it have problems? Absolutely. We're going to get into them for sure. Yeah. Absolutely. It is a mess of a movie, but it's a beautiful mess that I want to watch again and again and again and again and again. Yeah. So, but that leads me down that path as well of like, there's something going on with these, with the critic stuff of like, it's not gelling with, obviously the fan response. Like, Ghostbusters fans are over the moon for this movie.
Yeah.
And then like casual fans are also like, that was really fun and great. And people who aren't even big fans of Ghostbusters are like, I don't know, I really liked it. Right. Like, I've seen a lot of people like apologizing for liking this movie, and I don't get what's going on there. It is feeling a lot like John Carter. It's also feeling a lot like The Last Jedi and Solo, where like The Last Jedi and Solo were, everybody that I talk to, for the most part, is like, The Last Jedi, maybe not as much, but Solo for sure is like, I don't know, I really liked it, right? The Last Jedi is polarizing for the Luke Skywalker of it all, but there was a lot of like the internet, particularly Twitter, causing a big kerfuffle, and then you just end up hearing like the same three opinions parroted back at you from everybody. Right. Yeah. And to me, it's like, it's very obvious to me when somebody is a legitimate, like, let's say Star Wars fan, right? Like a legitimate fan of the saga, with informed and intelligent opinions, and they don't like The Last Jedi, right? Like, when you and I have a conversation about it, I don't feel like you are just parroting back, you know, the what the Russian bots were,
the buzzwords,
were posting all over Twitter. But then, like, I was in a group chat with a few people, and I had posted something about the marathon, the Star Wars marathon, on May the 4th. They're doing like a all nine saga movies. It's like 20 plus hours. So I posted something about that. In this group chat, being like, check this out. This is pretty crazy. It's like, who's going to sit for that long for all these movies? And I mean, not only were the responses on Twitter like, well, I'll be there for 1 to 6. It's like, okay, whatever. but then this group chat, there was I saw like 10 people in this group chat start going like saying the Twitter talking points. Right. And I just posted the emoji, like the zipper mouth emoji of like, you guys can have whatever opinions you want. They're wrong opinions, but that's fine. That's totally, I regret bringing up Star Wars in a mixed social setting. I should know better than that. But there was lots of Disney is ruining Star Wars type of speak. My God. It's so funny to me because that, like, oh, I'll be there for 1 to 6. If you remember the marathons that they did in the lead up to Force Awakens, because there were, for Force Awakens opening, there were marathons that did 1 through 6 and then concluded with the Force Awakens, right? There were a lot of people then, and we're only talking, you know, how long has it been? We're coming up on an anniversary, aren't we? I guess not quite, but what is that, 7 years ago? There were people back then being like, oh, I'll be there for 4, 5, and 6, but I'll skip 1 through 3. And then all of a sudden the sequel trilogy comes out. Now everybody's a massive fan of the prequels. where have you people all been for the last 30 years?
I think a lot of those kids were just too young to like have a voice on the internet. You know what I mean?
For sure. But I mean, like, I can verify that some of these people are in their mid to late 30s. It's the same people. It's the same people that crap on the sequels, like as a whole, like just as a general response, they're the same people that were crapping on the prequels because the red letter media things made them think that the prequels were bad. Right. So I just like I'm seeing similar, I'm getting similar vibes. I'm seeing similar patterns here with Afterlife and Frozen Empire. Cause now all of a sudden a bunch of people have negative things to say about Afterlife as well in retrospect, which like Afterlife was very well received when it came out.
I remember critics not loving it.
Yeah.
And I remember a lot of that saying like, oh, well, the 2016 one had to die for this. Like there was some negative pushback on Afterlife. I do remember it at the time. But yeah, it does feel a lot more negative now than it did back then.
Yeah. Yeah.
On
Afterlife. But the funny thing is that like within the fandom, within the Ghostbusters fandom, I'm also seeing a lot of like Star Wars fandom patterns. So I've seen three posts. Two on Facebook and one on Twitter, that from like Ghostbusters fan accounts of really frustrated Ghostbusters fans being like, you know what? I think maybe some of you just aren't fans of Ghostbusters. You just like one movie from 1984, and that's fine. It's okay to like one movie from 1984, but you don't like the cartoons. You don't like Ghostbusters 2. You don't like 2016. You don't like Afterlife. I don't think you like Ghostbusters. And it's like, you can go and you can find audio on the internet of me saying exactly the same thing about Star Wars. And I just find it so interesting that like, because there's a lot of crossover, obviously, in these fandoms, but there are some people that are just like, they are diehard Ghostbusters fans and they're now experiencing what we experienced during the prequel era, especially like in the midst of Clone Wars and everything. Right. But then like really, really hardcore over the last like 5 years since The Last Jedi. Right. Where it's like everything that's come out since The Last Jedi, the majority of people have very negative things to say about, like they're just very like critical things. And it's like, I don't think that a lot of you like Star Wars. I think you guys like The Empire Strikes Back, which is like one movie out of now, like 11 movies, like, you know, and is nothing in comparison to the amount of hours of Clone Wars and Rebels and Bad Batch and Resistance and all of that. Right. Like, and Ghostbusters honestly is like, it's already there. It's a franchise with a massive legacy with hours and hours and hours and hours of content, especially stuff that most people haven't seen. That they just like don't even know about. Like so many people just don't even know that Extreme Ghostbusters exists.
Dude, can we talk about that for a second? So one of my friends who actually dressed up with us, huge Ghostbusters fan. We were talking about like, oh, by the way, Extreme Ghostbusters finally came out on like the complete set finally came out on DVD. I was so excited. And he's like, what's Extreme Ghostbusters? And I just looked at him like, are you messing with me right now? He's like, no, I don't know what this is. What are you talking about? And like, I went into the whole spiel. He's like, what? That sounds awesome. And I'm like, yeah, man, it's awesome. And nobody knows about it. It drives me crazy.
Yeah. Because not only that it exists in the first place, but that like it's actually some of the best Ghostbusters stuff out there, right? I mean, like so many Extreme Ghostbusters vibes in this movie. I would say like the overall tone of the bad guy is more Extreme Ghostbusters than it is real Ghostbusters. But I've talked a whole bunch. And I want to hear a little bit more from you, Joe, of I mean, like all I've basically done is defend the position that you and I are about to take. But let me have it. Let me, because we really haven't talked about this very much other than just sort of giving each other the like thumbs up of like, yep, I loved it.
Real brief.
Yeah. So we've been saving it all. So lay it on me. It's slime me, Joe. Slime me.
Yeah. I mean, I obviously am pretty much on the exact same page as you, just because like, man, I was so excited for this movie and it was a matter of, you know, years and years and years and years and years waiting and waiting and waiting for Ghostbusters 3. And I love Afterlife. Genuinely. I really, really always like my stance on it never changed. Like I always enjoyed it. It was always really exciting to get, you know, another true Ghostbusters 3 movie, but it wasn't the movie I was hoping for, but it was a movie that I was really happy we got. I really had a great time with it. And I love that it was a tribute to Harold Ramis. It was, you know, the last Ghostbusters film that, Ivan Reitman was kind of a part of and contributed to. So it was really important. I really enjoyed it. I loved where it left off. And it was, if it was the last Ghostbusters movie we got, I would have been very happy. Mm-hmm. But this is the movie that I wanted since 1989. This is the next Ghostbusters film that ever since I was a child, I was like, well, I want the next Ghostbusters adventure in Manhattan with them already being Ghostbusters and just kicking butt. And it's a new fun adventure. And there's like new characters and new bad guys, scary ghosts, like all this stuff. This was the movie that I waited my entire life for. Literally my entire life. My one of my earliest memories, period, is my dad taking me to see Ghostbusters 2 in the movie theater. So like, this is literally feels like something that has I've been waiting my entire life for. And yeah, I mean, I agree with you, right? Like it's not a perfect movie, but I just don't care. Like I really don't care. There are problems with it. I think there's some issues with pacing. I think at times it feels like not every character has enough to do. But like, it genuinely doesn't bother me because like what's there is so good and I love so much. Like it doesn't bother me. I mean, really, I think my biggest disappointment with the movie is that there was so much great stuff in the trailers and I watched everything. Everything that came out, I watched. And there was so many like great one-liners and scenes and like little things that ended up not happening to make it to the final cut of the film that like I was really excited to see. Oh, what's the story with this? What's going to happen with here? And it was just it was a little disappointing to see so much of that stuff not make the final cut. But what we got was awesome. And I don't care. What's really exciting, too, is that Bill Kinnon actually kind of went on record over the last few days saying that, like, yeah, there's a lot of stuff that, like, unfortunately, it was really, really, really awesome and it didn't make it to the final cut. He's like, but in whatever release we do, I'm going to make sure you guys see those scenes. So I think that's a pretty safe bet that there will be deleted scenes and stuff on whatever upcoming release and we'll get to see all that stuff. So I'm not too upset about it. And if, you know, he's the director, right? He's the creator. So if he's saying it's for the best, you know, you got to trust that vision. And I guess my other, like, I don't want to say nagging complaint because it's really not even a complaint. I'm really like okay with it. I do think the first act of the film itself, like, just it's really slow until we get to that buildup. Like the intro is like awesome. That like 1904 flashback, really, really cool. I really loved that. But like after that and after the first bust, everything just kind of like slows down to a crawl. But at the same time, I Mike, as you know, I'm sure most people who are listening don't know. I love the Ghostbusters Firehouse. Every time I have a friend in town who like is even a remotely small Ghostbusters fan, I'm like, oh, we got to go to the Firehouse and we have to get like there's a bar across the street. We have to have drinks outside the Firehouse and just chill out. I love being at that Firehouse. Like that's like the Ecto-1 and the Firehouse are Ghostbusters. Like just icons. Like for me, like when I think of Ghostbusters, those are the first two things I think of before I think of any of the actors and performances and, you know, the everything that is right about that franchise. But I, you know, as slow as I felt the first act was, I didn't care because we were just in the firehouse for so much of it and seeing how everything connects and seeing, you know, the attic that we've never seen before and like all these like little Easter. I was so happy being there. I did not care that it felt like we were taking too much time there. I was like, nope, I'm okay. I want to live in this fictional firehouse because the interior is not the same as the exterior filming locations. But I didn't care, man. I was just like, yep, give me more of this. I'll take a whole movie of people just talking in different rooms in the firehouse. I don't need any busting. Give it to me. I don't care. But yeah, I mean, overall, really, 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 really fun movie. Loved Garaka. Love the characters, like everybody new that they introduced, I really loved. Everyone returning, I really loved because I already love them. Awesome. It was awesome.
Yeah. I mean, like I echo all of that, right? The first act is definitely slow. It takes a long time for the actual like Garaka stuff to get going.
No.
We spend a lot of time establishing sort of a status quo and getting everybody up to speed on, you know, what's been going on, and how the Ghostbusters have been functioning. Mm-hmm. There's a bit of a question of like, where are the ghosts coming from? Because in previous incarnations, it's always been really clearly explained why there are or are not ghosts at any given point in time. So the fact that there just are kind of some ghosts around, we talked about this a little bit, you know, I think a couple episodes ago about like, it's as easy as them just explaining that since what happened, it's Oklahoma, right? Since what happened there with Gozer, the membrane between dimensions is just it's very thin, like stuff keeps mm-hmm. happening. And so it, you know, and things have happened close together. And because of that, ghosts are just more prominent, and it's a problem that's probably only going to get worse. And then, cause it's really easy to do that. And they almost got there in this movie. They almost got there with the, like, it's a, like the and they can easily do it in the next one, right? Of like the ghost trap or the containment unit is basically a gateway. Like it's like because of the cross rift, right, from 1984, and it happening a second time in 2024. It's like, okay, so this is basically like Manhattan is now like kind of half in, half out of the ghost dimension in certain ways, because this stuff just keeps happening here, right? So now like ghosts are just going to occur. It's just going to be a very common. And then you've set yourself up perfectly for, you know, like more stories with the Ghostbusters. It's like, okay, it's just there. But the biggest thing that I took away from this is that this is not a movie. It was condensed into a movie, but it is in fact, the first season of a television show. We just come in sort of like three or four episodes in already. And we kind of skip a couple in the middle, right? Like, cause you could have easily had like them sort of getting set up and figuring out how to be Ghostbusters and stuff like that. We don't have any of that. We skip straight to like, they know what they're doing.
That's coming though. Cause that's the Dark Horse 4-issue series that's coming, which another big complaint I have, that last issue, that fourth issue should have come out before this movie came out. Mm-hmm. And meanwhile, it's starting, I think, Wednesday.
The first issue comes out.
This week.
Yeah. So like there's that component of it. And then there are a couple of busts that happen in the middle of the movie that we never even see. Yeah. Right. Like the first time that they have the call and she's not allowed to come with them. Mm-hmm. We never see what that ghost is. Yeah. Never. Cause we stick with Phoebe the whole time. Right. So, like clearly they went out, they did something. Right. I mean, we don't really know because we don't see aftermath of it or anything like that. But presumably they got called out on a ghost and they busted it and they brought it back and, you know, whatever. There's so much more story in this movie where it doesn't surprise me that a bunch of it has been cut, and that there's a lot sort of on the editing floor we'll get to see in a Blu-ray release, right?
Let me get your take on this, because I kind of have my own opinion, and it's something in general for the Ghostbusters franchise as a whole. Do you ever feel like it's a bit jarring to see you have ghosts like Slimer, the Scolari brothers, who are clearly ghosts of human beings, but like they had the Scolari brothers were probably murderers, right? Because they were given the chair. You have Slimer, who is a glutton, so he has that, like, you know, those, like, negative aspects. So I guess, like, if you were, like, a bad or greedy person or whatever in your life, your ghost is just, like, an ugly soul kind of thing. But then you have a character like Melody or Egon, who are basically just glowing, transparent humans. Do you ever feel like there's too much of a rift between those two things? Like there's not enough consistency? Because then you also have like a ghost of a dragon, and dragons aren't real. And like there's just, it's just like a ghost monster. Like, do you ever feel like there's not enough consistency between the different types of ghosts, or is that something that doesn't even bother you?
No,
it's always been that way, right? Like,
yeah, it's always been that way. It doesn't bother me. It doesn't bother me because the world, if you pay attention, explains a lot of it, right? Mm-hmm. And I mean, a lot of what you just said is exactly it, right? Slimer is in the state that he's in because of the life that that person that became Slimer led, right? So he becomes a grotesque monster. Because that's what the psychic imprint leaves behind, right? The spirit that's there is this one that's sort of like warped and twisted into this creature. And then on top of that, you like within Ghostbusters lore, you have not everything is as straightforward as this was a person who lived and died and is now a ghost, is now a spirit with unfinished business, right? You have demons, you have other dimensional, otherworldly beings like the Boogeyman or Samhain, right? That are not, they're not ghosts, they're not necessarily demons, they're not, you know, like because Garaka is described as a demon, right? So he's a demonic phantom or something like that, I think is what they say. So he is not, Garaka is not a ghost. Garaka is not a human being that like is left behind. He is clearly something from another world, another dimension that is in our world and has these, you know, otherworldly powers and is ghost-like. Is, you know, the ghost rules apply, but some don't, right? And that's why it's like, okay, some of this stuff doesn't work. And I think one of the other things, like this movie specifically did for the first time in one of the films, is expand the lore outside of proton packs, ghost traps, and the containment unit into, you know, the Fire Masters and stuff, which is like RGB fans know that the Ghostbusters world is a lot bigger than just these four guys.
Yeah.
And the stuff that they've done. I mean, but that is implied very clearly in the first film. It is a part of the fabric of the first film, which is ghosts are everywhere. They finally, you know, they get the readings on the library ghost, and that allows them to finally build the proton packs and the ghost trap and the containment unit, right? Egon finally has like the hard science that he needs in order to finish this work that he's been doing. And so then they go out and they start catching all of these ghosts. These ghosts are a side effect of an other dimensional incursion, right? Like they are the side effect of energy leaking through the doorway on the top of Spook Central, right? Like that's what's happening in that movie. That's why there are so many ghosts. That's why they're all showing up all of a sudden. And now it's a business that these guys can take advantage of. In the second movie, it happens again. The slime is, you know, because of Vigo is creating extra psychokinetic and you know, ectoplasmic energy.
I think it's actually the other way around. I think Vigo gains his strength because the slime is gaining so much strength from the negative emotions of New York it's just enhancing everything. And so Vigo just happens to be the strongest entity at the time. So his strength is what's kind of.
But there are circumstances that create these things,
yes,
right?
Yes.
But within the cartoon series, we have so many more like extra dimensional incursions from like I said, like the Boogeyman and Samhain that are the Sandman, right? Like these are beings from outside our world that affect our dimension, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, like I think that there is just really clearly there are different circumstances and different rules and different things that happen. So the Hell's Kitchen sewer dragon, who knows what that is?
Yeah.
Is that a ghost or is that, I mean, it's got bones inside of it, right? Like, is it actually like an extra dimensional being, like some sort of like creature from some other world that has just like managed to make its way through into our world, right? Because the other thing that we get in both RGB and extreme is cryptids, right? Like we get Yeah. Like, you know, like I like Chupacabra and the Jersey Devil and stuff like that, that are like the supernatural world within Ghostbusters is so much larger than just a person died and now they're a ghost. Mm-hmm. Right. And I think like that's Dan Aykroyd, right? Like that's 1,000% him. And so much of I think what sort of ekes its way into everything, like it just sort of like seeps into it, is the stuff that's coming. It's his crazy coconuts mind, right? His beautiful, beautiful, crazy coconuts mind that informs all of that stuff. But this is the thing about Ghostbusters that I will always come back to. That core of it, that nugget that is at the center, that ridiculous bananas original treatment that Dan Aykroyd did, where it's the future, ghosts are everywhere, and you know, like it was meant to be like a sci-fi Star Wars type of movie. And then Harold Ramis comes in and he pairs it down into a movie about these four guys, right?
Mm-hmm.
That nugget, that core is still there.
Yeah.
Like it persists to this day, and it finds its way out in different ways in each iteration, even 2016, because 2016 has some really cool ideas in it, and it's got some really great ghosts. I mean, that dragon ghost thing that they fight at the rock concert is fantastic, right? It's awesome. There's a lot of really cool stuff in that movie. It's just the movie itself doesn't work for me personally, but like that, all of that ridiculousness makes it so that I am comfortable with sort of whatever rules they give me, right? But the other part of it is that certainly for the movies, we have so little sort of established lore that whatever they tell us is the situation, right?
Sure.
You're not breaking canon, you're not contradicting some other lore. It all makes perfect sense as far as I'm concerned, so it's never bothered me. Like But I mean, it occurs to me, like I think about it, I go like, okay, so how come Melody is just, you know, this type of ghost, right? As opposed to these other circumstances where, you know, like, cause some of them are malevolent spirits. Some of them are tortured souls, right? I think the library ghost is probably the best example that I could use to sort of create like the delineation between the two types of ghosts, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because obviously Egon is a major player in Afterlife, even though we don't see him until the very end. He is there the entire time. He's just not able to physically manifest because he's playing chess with Phoebe and he's showing her, you know, how to fix the proton pack and stuff like that. Like there's all this stuff that goes on between the two of them. And the fake out in this movie, I think, is just so beautiful. It's so genius when we first meet Melody of the chess set, and it's like, oh my god, are we gonna see Egon? We're as disappointed as she is. It's so good. But yeah, like
I was actually relieved. I was like, no, he crossed over. He needs to not be here.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, no, it's the right decision, but we still get like you're kind of like, oh, is it going to be Egon? And then it's not Egon. And we feel deflated in the same way that she is, which I think really, really works for the story. Just really great execution. Their story, Phoebe and Melody's story is to me the best part of them. But we'll get into that in a sec. The library ghost is a benign spirit unless you disturb it. Right. Like it's just, you know, vertical book stacking, because no human would stack books like that. It's just there doing its librarian thing. But then, you know, if you make too much noise, it'll transform into the malevolent spirit, right? So to me, it's like that. Like that. I mean, literally, that's the first ghost, right? So it's
the people complaining that, like, oh, they never caught her. Like, well, they probably did, but then the containment unit was destroyed, and by the end of the first movie, so she probably just went back to where home was.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if some of the stuff that we get from the deleted scenes is like the containment unit is leaking, right? Like the containment unit is not 100%, right? And that, you know, along with the orb no longer being in the room and that sort of thing. It's like they're like sort of these multiple things are happening all at once, coincidentally, that allow Garaka to sort of start to exert his influence. And then he takes advantage of that situation. Mm. Right. And because that is very clearly what's happening, although it's never really said. Right. Which is that, like, the containment unit is busting at the seams, and it's causing a problem. And it would have been as simple as, like, you know, because even before Garaka is affecting it, right? They're already having trouble. Like, they have the scene where it's like Gary can't pull the lever, right? Mm. So it's like this has already been happening. It would be very easy to just be like, yeah, some of the ghosts seem to be getting out. It's like Slimer is out. Slimer is not in the containment unit. The library ghost is not in the containment unit. It could be as simple as they've been out since 1984. But I mean, I guess Slimer, we have evidence that he's at least been out since 1990, right? 1989, yeah. 1990. Yeah. Because they didn't catch him again.
Well, 84, right? Because he got out. He was free at the end of the film. And then he was... never, you know, we saw him running around the firehouse in 89, right? So since the first cross trip, exactly. He's been out. So.
And I think, like, there's a little bit of an established thing of, like, they probably just, like, they didn't ask the Ghostbusters to come back to the library. Ray seems to have been banned from the building. But also don't worry about it, you know. Also, just don't worry about it. Sometimes we just don't need to worry about it because it's a Ghostbusters movie. And is that a cop-out? Maybe. I don't know. You can call it a cop-out if you need to. But to me, I'm just like, these movies are cartoons. Like, they always have been. And if you want to pretend like the first one is some piece of high art, you can if you want to. I mean, it's a masterpiece. I'm not going to argue with you on that, but is it like, it's not Oppenheimer, like, relax, guys. Like, it's Ghostbusters. There's a reason why it spawned a cartoon series that goes on to, you know, influence the lives of every kid born between 1984 and 1987, right? Like every boy born in that era is a Ghostbusters fan, whether they like it or not, because there's just something about the Ghostbusters, about a proton pack and a ghost trap and all of that. I mean, we talked about this at length on Perfect 10, right? I think the resonant thing is, you know, we're all scared. We all have fears, especially of the unknown and supernatural. And the Ghostbusters, they're just four guys. They're just four guys. There's nothing. They don't have superpowers. They're not particularly gifted in any way. They're not physically fit even, right? Like, they are just... they're four normal guys that run the gamut of, like, well, you got your nerd, you got your sort of like eccentric goofball. You've got, the sarcastic funny guy, and you've got an everyman in Winston that is just like, everybody's there for somebody to attach to, for somebody to identify with. And they all have the same amount of power, right? Mm. Like, I'll always go back to it. Winston says it. We have the tools. We have the talent. That's it. That's it. That's all you need to be a Ghostbuster. That is such a, I think, such a special and magical thing. It's a thing that I think that Star Wars kind of got in its own way with the Phantom Menace, with midichlorians, which I think George has then, you know, spent a lot of energy correcting since 1999. And I think the sequel trilogy and the Ahsoka series in particular have gone out of their way to be like, oh, okay. Midichlorians are a thing, but they're not the thing. Like, just relax about it, right? Because before that, anybody could be a Jedi, right? There was no force sensitive doesn't show up as a term until people start putting mechanics to it in, like, role-playing games and card games and stuff. Like, the first time I ever heard the term force sensitive was the Decipher card game. And you know whose card said force sensitive? Han Solo. Not Luke Skywalker. Luke Skywalker's card did not say Force sensitive. Luke Skywalker was just a Jedi. But Han's card said Force sensitive, meaning that he was sensitive to the Force, which is where his luck comes from, right? Like, that was the implication on that card. But the Ghostbusters don't have that problem. You worry about it with like, oh, the Spengler family and all of that, that they would somehow make it that sort of a thing. I guess they made Firemasters into a thing, which is like Ghostbuster Jedi, but but it's a separate thing, right? To me, that is the core of the magic of the Ghostbusters, is that all it takes is a proton pack and a ghost trap and you can catch a ghost, right? And that's what Afterlife captured so well, was that like Phoebe and Podcast grab the stuff, they don't know what they're doing, but they manage to
figure it out,
do the thing, right? So
figure it out.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't really know how we got on. Oh, you asked me that question about
I was just curious about your take on all of that.
Yeah. Let me ask you a question for a change.
Yeah, do it.
What was your favorite part of the movie?
Oh God, don't put me on the spot there.
How many times have you seen it?
So I've only seen it once. I was supposed to see it again on Saturday. But I had a little tummy issue, so that was the end of that. So I am going to see it again tomorrow, because I want to get that Ecto Cooler before Alamo nicks it from the menu. Favorite part of the movie, man. I mean, look, I am a huge sucker for just like when all of the forces are gathered. So like, it's probably going to be when everybody shows up at the end. And even though like it was mostly Phoebe's proton pack that did all the heavy lifting, and I can't think of his name. I want to call him Haja, but that's his Star Wars name.
Nadim.
Okay. Yeah. Even though it was really just kind of the two of them getting it done. I don't know, man, when everybody is together and the whole family's around, like, it's like, oh God, this is so good. Like, I don't care what happens next. It's just like, it really probably was the reunion. And I had a feeling that that was going to be my favorite part. I loved the bust. I mean, in the beginning in Ecto-1, because it was just like, oh man, this is just, I know these streets. I'm looking at these streets. I'm like, yep, I know where that is. Oh, there's City Hall. You don't realize it's City Hall, but they're at City Hall right now, because that's the block that runs right along the exact street where it was, come on, let's run some red lights. It was just a different camera angle, but you're on the same street. So this is my first Ghostbusters movie that I had seen them as a kid, obviously, but I had not, like, I didn't really start spending any time in Manhattan until I went to art school. So my art school was in Manhattan, and that's kind of how I started getting familiar with Manhattan in the first place and, you know, spending so much time there. But this is the first time watching a Ghostbusters movie that I was like, I know where that is already. I've already been there before. I know exactly where this is. I know where the street is. I know how to get there from here. And it was just like, it was a weird thing I wasn't expecting to feel watching this movie, because it really felt like, wow, yeah, this is home. Ghostbusters is home for me. It's always been home, because, you know, as a kid growing up, it's like, oh, I live here. So yeah, that's cool. And then, you know, learning about all the film locations was cool. But like, this is the first time it really felt like, wow, yeah, I'm watching a movie in my backyard for the first time. And like, this is my home turf. So that was really cool too. So that opening bust in general was really, really fun. All the character moments were so, it's so hard to choose. Rey was awesome in this movie. They did him so much justice, because like, I don't know, man, Rey is Dan Aykroyd, right? And Dan Aykroyd is Rey. So if this were real life and you told Dan Aykroyd, yeah, you can't be a Ghostbuster anymore, he would be that annoyed and upset and depressed about it. Like, and just be like, nope, doesn't matter. I'm going to do it anyway. Cause that's just like who he is. Right. He just like loves the paranormal. He loves being a Ghostbuster. This is how Dan Aykroyd likes spending his golden years. This is what he wants to do. Dude, they did so much right. God, what else? The melody stuff is amazing. I don't want to talk too much about that in general, but like, I guess since I brought up the, the kind of final battle, I think it's kind of neat. You touched on before how, the Ghostbusters aren't just, scientists. It's not just science that solves the, fixes the problem. But for the most part, the films have kind of always been, you know, science, maybe not overcoming, but at least kind of getting to the point that it understands and fixes the problem of the mysterious and the otherworldly. But this is, I feel like, the first time we ever had a Ghostbusters film, not so much the cartoons, done a million times, but where science isn't enough, but it is still really important. And it's also the mysticism, the things we don't really understand, but we understand that it exists. And you have that firebending stuff going on. And they're like, all right, we don't know how you're doing it, but we know you can do it. So we're going to take that and we're going to mix it with that, you know, that brass plated cyclotron component, that those two things together are going to be enough to hold down Garaka, while Melody comes in. And I thought it was so beautiful that they used her, what was it, her cursed item? Mm-hmm. Is that what they were calling it, the cursed item?
Yeah, they said a bunch of different things. They didn't really use one term.
Okay, yeah. So the match that she was stuck with, and, you know, was the reason that she was stuck here in the first place. It was the thing that was keeping her grounded in this dimension, was actually the thing that set her free, because she was able to use it to, it was something that destroyed her family, but it was something that she was able to use to save Phoebe's family. I was like, oh man, what, like, great storytelling, that, you know what I mean? Like, it was such like a, like, oh, what a cool idea for that character to have that character arc, to kind of come full circle. And, you know, especially after she had betrayed Phoebe and set her up to be kind of a pawn in Garaka's game. I don't know. Like, it's the final battle, as I wish everybody else had more to do, because it really was just like, well, our proton packs don't work, so I guess we're just here. There were enough cool things that went on there that I really, really, really appreciated it.
Yeah. Yeah. It feels like there were reshoots in this movie. I mean, there are reshoots in every movie, but right. But there were significant reshoots in this movie.
Yeah.
And I think that the firehouse, like the third act of the firehouse, was one of the pieces that was majorly reshot.
Yeah.
I think that initially there was more of an all out, like, there are ghosts coming from everywhere sort of thing.
Yeah.
Because if you sort of remember back to the trailers, there's the shot of the four of them with the jackets on the roof.
Right.
That's not in the movie, right? Like, at no point in time do any of them even wear the jacket. I think that Lucky is the only one who has one on, right?
Mm-hmm. The Phantom is so pissed right now. They were like, oh, this is going to be, everybody's going to wear this jacket.
Yeah.
So many people bought that jacket, and I would have been one of those people who bought one. I wouldn't have been pissed, because it's a cool jacket, but, like, people are so upset that it wasn't really as big a part of the movie as the marketing made it seem it was going to be. Because it's, like, on everything, right? It's on they're wearing them in the posters.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's not just the trailer. So people do feel like there was a little bit of a bait and switch there, but
yeah, for sure. I think that I think that Garaka had a little bit more of an army in the first version of this finale. And then my guess is that it was cut for time, was that they wanted to just kind of streamline it a little more, but because it felt like it was a good escalation of stakes until like right up to the Ecto-1, like the possessor goes in the Ecto-1, and then the possessor leaves the Ecto-1, goes upstairs. And one of my favorite moments in the whole movie is when, you know, it goes into the pizza. There's just a fresh whole pizza sitting on the table, on the counter, which, like, let's not question that, but it starts flopping away, and then Slimer just comes out of nowhere and eats the ghost.
So good. This is and so good.
Finn Wolfhard's delivery of, I know that guy. It's so good. It's so, so good. His whole, like, CD, I don't even, there's so many plots in this movie, but his whole thing of, like, with Slimer is just, it is such a, I've heard other people be like, it's pointless. And I'm like, it is not pointless.
No.
It's not pointless.
No way. It's so
fun.
It is what it is.
Like, it's there. It is there simply for the fact that it is there. Like,
it's awesome.
And it's great because Slimer is a part of the firehouse, right? Like this is finally an establishment in the movie universe that Slimer is one of the Ghostbusters as well, right? Mm-hmm. And it's a perfect setup for what hopefully will be an animated series continuation of this, that Slimer becomes part of the team, right? That like Slimer is not a bad ghost. Not all ghosts are bad, I think, was a really great thing that was established in this movie. But yeah, like that third act feels like it was missing something, like something was cut out. And there's a lot of, once you start to understand the geometry of the geography of the firehouse itself, and then if you pay really close attention, there are several moments in the movie where people are coming from one direction, but then like
right
frames, I mean like this is one of those things that once we've got it on home video, we'll be able to do the detective work, but I am fairly certain like frames are flipped, staircases switch walls,
in order
for the action to make sense in the cut. But if you really think, if you really like pay attention to it, it's like, okay, that's not geographically where that was in previous scenes, right? And that is another thing that indicates to me that like stuff was shifted around and moments from sequences were used to cobble together what we ended up with. And so I think that's where like the first act is really slow and takes up too much time of the movie. And then the third act is way too brief and just sort of like rams through a bunch of concepts. But I mean, ultimately it all works for me, right? The way that Phoebe has her sort of stuff to say to Melody and Melody has to sort of make a bit of a choice of like, you know, I think that we needed another beat there. We needed one more beat for Melody to understand that like, that's not like the gate. What we needed to see was what was on the other side of the containment, right? Mm-hmm. Like that she thought that it was something. We needed to see the moment where she sees what's on the other side, expecting to see her family, and she just sees an army of malevolent spirits, right? And realizes, like, oh no, like if this happens, Garak is going to destroy the world, right? And that she's kind of been hoodwinked a little bit.
And they did kind of like tease. It's called Frozen Empire. We didn't really see Garak as empire alone, and totally. Like all of the marketing was like they're literally. Most of the TV spots were saying Garak is going to release every ghost the Ghostbusters have ever caught. And like,
yeah,
the moment happens, but like, we didn't see anybody from the past. I was like, we're definitely going to see the Scolari brothers and the cab ghosts and, you know, it was just all generic looking ghosts kind of escaping. And that was really,
But the way that Phoebe uses her proton pack, Nadim uses the fire, we get sort of like the combination of the two, right? And then it's like, okay, so we've contained Garaka, we've stopped Garaka, but now we need to like hold Garaka, right? Mm-hmm. And that's when the original Ghostbusters go, like he's standing on a trap. Like the containment unit is, we said it earlier in the movie, it's really just a giant trap. Yeah. And it's open, we just need to close it. Like we just need to hit the pedal, right? And so that's what they go down to do, right? And I love like all of that stuff of like Peter, do you know what this means? Pretend for a second that I don't. and then him is like, so all we got to do is blah, 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 blah. And he's like, Ray, we trust you, just do it. It's so good. I mean, like all of that works so well for me. And then the button on the movie, the thing that really, really, really sends it all home for me is the dad moment. I love it so much because it's like, Dad, Gary, whatever. Yeah. And then she like walks away. It's like, yeah, I heard it. It's really good. Like I just think like all that family stuff is really good. But for me, the standout, I said this earlier, right? The standout for me is that storyline between Phoebe and Melody. I was not expecting a queer teen romance storyline to be the heart of this movie. But it was, and I thought that it was really, really well done. I mean, the two of them had such good chemistry.
Yeah, they were great.
McKenna Grace is so talented, so talented. I mean, I said this when Afterlife was new. I was like, this kid is unbelievable, and she's only gotten more skilled in her trade as you know the years have gone on. This is going to be a thing of like she's in these Ghostbuster movies, but eventually like she's gonna be nominated for Academies. She is very, very good. And this character, like Phoebe, is such a genuine, nuanced character. I want more from this world because I love that character so much, and I love what she's done with it. But this storyline between the two of them, and her falling for a ghost, I mean, it is something that again, this is not a movie. This was the first season of a TV show, and to me, it's actually a little bit of a disappointment that they did make it as a movie. I think this would have been much better as a 10 episode series. And I you know, if Sony was like, we're going to also have our own streaming platform, that's what it would have been. But Sony hasn't been that brash. They tried on the PlayStation store to do it with, what was it, Powers, I think, and it's like nobody cares. But they just made it really difficult to understand how to watch the show, and it wasn't a streaming platform. It was like, there are videos on our storefront. Do I have to buy them? Yes. Okay. Well, then I'm not going to do that. It's not a subscription service, because this is sort of like early days of PlayStation Plus and all that, right? But if they had a platform, they absolutely this into a TV series instead of a movie, and I think it would have worked better. I think if we had more time to develop this stuff, because I think that one of the things that should have been explored, that should have been more central, was Phoebe is falling in love with a ghost. Her family does not understand that that's what's happening, because she's 15 and very clearly like queer, to say the least, if not just gay, right? But obviously like exploring that idea. So that would have been a thing where it's like, well Gary and Callie are not immediately gonna jump to she's falling in love with a ghost, because A, it's a ghost, and B, it's a girl. So what are you talking about? And I think there would have been some really great opportunities for storytelling there of Trevor being like, do you guys not see what's happening here? Like join us in the year 2024. I think there could have been some really fun stuff there, but that it would have been a really, really great source of conflict of like, you're benched, you can't be a Ghostbuster. And so what ends up happening is she goes the opposite way. She ends up falling in love with a ghost. And it's like, listen, we told you couldn't bust ghosts. That didn't mean go fall in love with one. Right. And for her to like increasingly do more and more reckless things as a result of this relationship, and to give us more time to develop, and for us to start before it's revealed, to start to get the sense of like, maybe Melody actually isn't a great influence on Phoebe, and maybe there's something more going on here. Wait a second, the stuff that she's got Phoebe doing is actually helping Garaka, right? And then putting it together ourselves instead of having the movie tell us that Garaka is influencing things. Because I think there also just needed to be a beat to explain that. There is something cut from the movie. There is absolutely a piece cut from the movie. I guarantee it. Like, but in this storyline, they definitely edited this movie in a way. And I think this is the studio. I don't think that this is the filmmakers or the actors. I think that this is, again, like, this is what I talk about with Star Wars, with the Finn and Poe stuff. I think that the studio got involved and was like, you need to cut out the stuff that is explicit about these two girls.
Yeah. Because I had the same thought.
We cannot, this will not play in red states. This will not play in China, right? And other parts of Asia where these things are straight up illegal. They're just straight up illegal, right? And that sucks. It sucks that that's the world that we live in, but it is the world that we live in, because we get the leap from the ghost extractor, right, to Phoebe just immediately says, has it been tested on a living possession? What does that mean? Right. And I think what she means by that is like a person who has been possessed by a being. So like Janosch would have been a really great example, right? In Ghostbusters 2. It's like with this extractor, could they have like removed Viggo's influence from him? That sort of thing, right? I mean, at one point he even sort of takes over Janosch's body and Janosch kind of turns into a ghost. That's really confusing. We don't need to get into it. But we get the leap from there to them breaking in and her extracting her spirit from her own body. There is a beat in the middle missing there where they have a conversation. It probably happened in the firehouse when, like, after the diner scene, right? And it was probably like a, you know, we're on different dimensional planes. But they want to touch, right? And yeah. If you can be more explicit about the fact that Phoebe is falling in love with Melody and that Melody is manipulating Phoebe in this way, but accidentally also falling in love with her, right? Then if you can be more explicit, then you can have that scene where it's like, I wish there was some way for us to be together, some way for us to touch, right? And then for Phoebe to be like, I think maybe there is. And then we get there, right? Because as it stands in the movie that we have, I think most of us read between the lines, and it's not subtle. It's definitely there. Most people, I think, are picking up on this storyline, except for the people who are in very strong denial that could even be a possibility, right? So I think most of us get there of like, the reason why she's doing this is because she wants to kiss this ghost girl. Yeah. Like, that's why she's doing it. And they get really close, and it feels like they're going to do it, and then Garaka does his thing and we find out the real reason why this all sort of culminated, right? But yeah, there's a piece missing there. But even with that piece missing, it doesn't matter to me. Like, the fact that they were willing to put this in the movie, I think, is really awesome, because a lot of other major franchises would be terrified to do something like this. And even though it feels like it may have been compromised a little bit by the studio, it is still there. I don't think that it's subtext. I think that it's overt. I think it's in the text. It's just, they cut it in a way that there's almost like plausible deniability. You know what I mean? Which kind of sucks. And it feels a little bit, a little bit, you know, queer baity. But I don't think that the filmmakers, I certainly don't think like the writers, I don't think Gil Keenan, I don't think that they're to blame here. I think that it's the studio, and I think that ultimately that's who you have to keep happy, because they can just decide not to release a movie, as we've discovered. Mm-hmm. It sucks that we end up in a world where that's the case, but I do also think that this is like a major step forward for genre storytelling like this. That like, but again, if this were a TV series, they would have done it. If this were not a movie and we didn't have to worry about box office, but instead we were worrying about critical reception and people subscribing to a platform, they would have done it. They would have done it, because it's right there. And it is the heart of the story. Like, it is really, like, there's sort of that, and then there's the Ray story. And I feel like those two stories are really like the two generations, and they're the cores of those two stories happening simultaneously, and they play off of each other, which is so great. That one of the things that I think that people are missing in this movie that I don't hear anybody talking about is how well constructed it actually is, because there are some pacing issues. Yeah, there's obviously some stuff in the edit. There's some deleted scenes, clearly. But at the same time, the way that all of the threads come together for the finale is really, really skillfully done. Like, you can tell that the movie, like, the screenplay is a very good screenplay. What ended up on screen, that final edit, which, like, that's the make or break, right? Like, that final edit is the make or break for anything. It would be incredible if we get a director's cut of this movie.
Oh, I hope so, man.
There is one. There is a director's cut. Because the movie had a runtime, and then the runtime like reduced by almost half an hour before the release, right?
Yeah.
So there is a director's cut of this movie And I would like to see it. I hope that's what he's talking about when he says there's stuff and you guys will get to see it.
Well, based on the context of what he said, it doesn't sound like it, because he does say, like, I think when you see that cut content, you'll understand why it ended up not being in the final cut. So I don't think we're going to get it. I would love to. I don't know. But very quickly, a really neat thing. I just want to quickly say. So they revealed the cover for the steel bookcase.
Yeah.
Because that went on pre-order, I think the day the movie came out, they actually put that for pre-order on Amazon. The model for each Ghostbuster on the cover is actually my fiance Tina, because we are friends with the illustrator Chrissy Chung, who illustrated that piece for Sony. And Chrissy was just like, I really need reference. Can you help me? So we, like, Tina suited up. So we just took a bunch of different angles of Tina doing different poses and stuff like that. And, like, Tina is every Ghostbuster. And that proton pack is her HasLab pack. So I was really excited about that. And it's finally revealed that, you know, people are seeing it now. So if you see the steel bookcase, it's each Ghostbuster on the cover is Tina.
That's awesome. That's fantastic. That's a really cool.
I'm like, I'm so jealous, Chrissy for getting to draw it. But, you know, it's she's part of an agency that gets to do them. And then of Tina for getting to be kind of sort of on a Ghostbusters cover. That's, like, the neatest thing.
Yeah. I'm like, there are a lot of editions of this movie already.
Oh yeah.
Being promoted, right? The thing that's kind of interesting for me is that I bought the 4K Ghost Trap set that they did after Afterlife released, right? Or maybe with the release of Afterlife on 4K. I don't remember exactly when it came out, but yeah, I've got that one, right? And it's awesome. It's like, I no regrets. Like, it is an awesome set.
I am I pre-ordered that the week it went up, maybe within 2 days it went up, and they never sent it to me.
Oh, Amazon, right?
Yeah, they took too many orders, and a lot of people never got it. I was one of those people. And my friend who pre-ordered it like a month after me got his. And I was like, I'm happy you got it, but I'm so pissed off.
Yeah,
so mad.
It doesn't even make any sense, right? But no. I had to get it. Because I've got the Flux Capacitor Blu-ray set for Back to the Future, and they're like right next to each other, and it's like, yeah, these are pretty perfect next to each other.
Have you watched the preview cut of the original Ghostbusters from that?
No.
Dude, oh my god. As soon as you can, you need to watch it. Just keep, there's no score, but there are so many alternate takes and longer scenes and different angles. Dude, it's like watching the movie again for the first time, and it's really good. Like, obviously it's not as good as the original, but like the actual release cut, there are, it's so good. They actually showed it in theaters for like, you know, 3 or 4 screenings in one day last year.
Yeah.
And it was so awesome. And Jason Reitman actually came and like did like a little intro for each screening. And it was, it's so good. You have that set. Honestly, I think that's like the best. That's the jewel of that entire set, man. You have to check that
out. It's so funny. I get these sets, right? Like, I have all of these things, and it's because I'm a collector, right? And then I very often, like, don't end up ever even putting the discs in anything, right?
Oh,
like,
no, man. You got to do it.
Like, I think we watched Afterlife, but now, like, the thing is that now everything's on streaming, right? Like, it's, and like, I've got Ghostbusters, because I've bought Ghostbusters, let's see, how many times have I bought Ghostbusters? So we had our original VHS 2-pack of 1 and 2. Yeah, for anybody who remembers that one, it's the no ghost logo and like the red border, and you flip it, and the other side it's the Ghostbusters 2 no ghost logo with the red border. Like, so it doesn't have a backside to it. It's like two covers, right?
Yeah.
And it's a slipcase for 2 VHS cassettes. So that's what we had. I wonder where that is, actually. I don't even know where that ended up. It must be in my parents' house somewhere. I should really figure that one out. And then, when it came out on DVD the first time, one and two, the Green Slime editions, you know which ones I'm talking about, right? It's like the
so
Green Slime.
For America, that was the second release of the DVDs.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. And there, so I have a slip case set that's like, it's the thinner, like jewel case, or like the plastic mm-hmm. cases, right? So it's the two of them in one, and they're the really thin ones. That one's got so many great special features on it. I have watched all of that stuff because that one's got the video, the Mystery Science Theater style mm-hmm. overlay commentary.
Yeah,
where you can see the three of them sitting talking about the movie as they watch it.
Dude, that director's commentary of the original Ghostbusters, it's what Ivan Reitman, I think Joe Magic, and Harold Ramis is my favorite like director's commentary like ever. It's so good. They give you so much info and background stuff. Yeah. It's awesome.
It's fantastic. And then I have the Blu-rays. Mm-hmm. Those DVDs came with digital copies for iTunes, right? So I've got it. I've got them from that. And then the Blu-rays also, which I have the Blu-ray. So that's the blue slime.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Version.
Yeah.
I've got the 2-pack for that. That also came with digital copies. I think the case
itself has a little book in it or something, right? Am I remembering that correctly?
Yeah, it does.
Yeah, okay.
And then I have the 4K box set that we're talking about. So like I have bought those movies, four times. Well, I didn't buy the first one. My parents bought the first version, but I myself have bought them three times. And I'll probably buy them again in some future format that has yet to be revealed or released, invented. I mean, it's Ghostbusters. give me an excuse, right? But the Ghost Trap box set is so, it's so good because it like has sound effects and lights.
Yeah,
it
lights stuff. Up. Like, that's crazy.
It's so good. I should pull it out and just play with it a little bit. Maybe I'll post it on the TikTok. Go follow us on TikTok at Thunderquack. I think it's just Thunderquack on TikTok. Yeah. I don't know. Go find us. Thunderquack Podcast. You guys know how to use the Google. You search stuff. Is there anything else to say about this movie? Did you buy a popcorn bucket of any kind?
I did not buy any merch because I spent extra money on tickets for proton packs for me and Tina. So I wanted to make sure our proton packs had seats. So I did not pick up any of the merch. Really, I mean, right now, the only Ghostbusters merch I'm hoping to get is more Plasma Series. I did buy the most recent HasLab, the two in the box. So it's the Ghost Trap and the PKE.
Yeah.
So I'm like right now I'm being very careful about what I'm spending money on in terms of just stuff that isn't a necessity. I do have another question for you. I know you want to wrap up, but I don't know. Maybe this is a loaded question. I'm not sure. What are your feelings on the Mini Puffs returning after seeing the ones that we saw basically die when they were trapped? And after everybody kind of saying, well, the Gozerian era is over. And yet we still have Mini Puffs. What are your feelings on them being back and just being kind of like the minions of Ghostbusters now?
Yeah, I mean, it's ham-fisted and it's just like they are literally just like shoved in to the movie. I like they are not organic or germane to the plot in any way, shape, or form, in a way that like other things could not have just represented that. But like they need their Grogu, you know, like every franchise needs its Grogu now. It doesn't bother me in the least, right? Like it's a little obnoxious, but they're short scenes. They don't take anything away from the movie as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah.
It makes for cute merch. So I'm fine with it.
I did kind of like that they used them to, you know, literally kind of explain like, oh yeah, Garaka is talking to all of the other ghosts.
Yeah.
So like seeing so many of them reacting. Like, yeah, I agree. It could have been like other ghosts that they had in the lab contained, you know. They could have served that purpose too, but like at least they served a purpose, right? And they weren't just there to be the silly minions causing trouble or whatever.
I think that there's an attitude in this movie that ghosts are not all bad, and that not all ghosts require busting. And I think that the mini puffs, they play into that, right? That like, sure. that you know, I along with what Winston says when they get to the paranormal research lab or whatever, I can't remember what they call it, center, I think.
Sure.
He is, you know, we've been busting ghosts, but now we can observe them, right? And that's why it's an aquarium. That's why they use the aquarium. It's not just a random choice, but like they picked an aquarium because they have the tanks, right? So they can create these enclosures so that they can observe and study the ghosts. And it's such a great thing, because it comes out of real Ghostbusters originally, of like Ray basically saying to the other Ghostbusters and Egon very quickly agreeing with him, of like, when Slimer shows up, he's like, this is our opportunity to like study a ghost up close. Like, he doesn't seem to want to hurt us. He seems to like you, Peter. Like just, if we just feed him, he's going to hang out. Yeah. And then we can learn so much. Right. And then the video game like took that and did like a movie realistic version of it by having like the containment enclosure in that Slimer was in, so that Slimer could be seen and so that he could escape. And then you have to go catch him. But I like that we're establishing a world where not all of the ghosts are ghosts that need to be caught, just the ones causing problems.
Yeah.
Right. So I think that bodes well for future storytelling, whatever it ends up being. I really, really feel like we need to get like updates on animated series and other movies. And oh, stuff dude. Like that.
Well, he did. Gil Kinnan actually did talk about the animated series. It does not sound very far along, man. He's like, yeah, the scripts are being written and I've seen some of the artwork. And I was like, oh God, this sounds like they just actually started. They announced it like 2 years ago. And it's just scripts are written. Like, huh, okay, it's going to be a while.
I talked about it on the last Off the Record. And I mean, like, what I would like to see, as much as I want an animated series to continue these stories, and I like with the movie characters and stuff, I think that it would be more interesting for me if an animated series continues the real Ghostbusters timeline, right? Mm. So we would have extreme Ghostbusters characters come back in it.
And, oh, you know, my
like,
God.
Like that you would then like be continuing on from that version of the world. That's what I would like to see. I don't know that that's what they'll do. I think that they'll probably try and tie it into the more directly. And I had said, like, I think it's very easy to still have Phoebe and Trevor and Callie, like these characters still exist. What happened in Afterlife happened. It may have happened a little bit differently, but that did happen, right? And but that we're still in the RGB timeline, and so some things are going to be a little bit different. Some characters are going to be different. Because I would just like to have more stories. I'd like to see some of those characters come through, right? Mm-hmm. But more than that, if they are still doing the animated movie, I want the animated movie to be based on Dan Aykroyd's original treatment, his original script, the you know, 3-hour epic that he had created, that was like, no studio in the world could even do this if you wanted them to, sort of thing. Because in animation, we can, right? And Sony is actually like on the bleeding edge right now of like what's great in 3D animation, between Spider-Verse and Mitchell's versus the Machines and you know, the people that worked on that, working on Mutant Mayhem and stuff like that, like they're right there. And an extreme Ghostbusters in 3D in the future would be so rad, of like far-flung future, like 100 years in the future, flying cars, you know, like sci-fi Manhattan, you know, like the Fifth Element sort of thing, of like, and to make up whatever reason you need, there are ghosts everywhere now, right? Like whatever technology is causing this problem is now all of a sudden, ghosts are able to just come into our dimension willy-nilly, and the Ghostbusters have to do something about it, right? I mean, it's to me, it kind of just writes itself, but that's what I would love to see in animation. Like that's the sort of thing that it's like, if you're going to do animated stuff, use the medium, like let it be something more than just these, you know, four people in a hearse driving around, because we can get that with the live action stuff, and it's really great what we've been getting. But like, so
I remember there being reports a while ago, maybe mm-hmm. like last year, because it wasn't when they first announced it. It was more like some time had passed. I do remember there being reports that one of these things was actually going to be that it was yeah. going to take place in the future. I don't remember if it was going to be the series or the film. But I do know that the series and the film are going to be two totally different things. But yeah, honestly, I'm pretty sure that one of them is going to be like everything took place, but now we're in the future and it's Dan Aykroyd's script kind of thing.
So on the Sony Pictures Animation Wiki on fandom.com, it says under plot, the movie is set to be from a ghost perspective. That's all.
What?
Yeah, let me see what in March 2023, Animation Magazine revealed Lauren Sasson, Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse, is confirmed to be involved, expressing her excitement about the current production in an interview. So that's a year ago is the last piece of information from this. It's been in development since 2015 while the reboot was still being made. I mean, like, we were supposed to get the animated movie instead of after,
right?
And then yeah. Jason Reitman was like, I want to make a movie, and they went, okay, go ahead. Let's see. Yeah, there's a lot of stuff about like it being the same people that did Spider-Verse and Mitchells versus the Machines. It was originally intended to come out in 2019 before Afterlife had any further / production, but then that changed it, obviously. So yeah, it seems like there's not a lot of news as of right now.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, there wasn't much.
8 months ago, here's a YouTube video. Sony Pictures Animation's canceled Ghostbusters movie was going to reimagine. I don't want to click on that because it's a YouTube. Oh, I'm seeing some of these screenshots. I remember some of this coming out, and it's yeah, the this was like leaked stuff. And it's like
was the Ghostbusters were
ghosts. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. I remember this now. Yeah. So maybe this is not actually happening anymore.
The animated film isn't happening anymore? Oh, that's well, I know the series is.
I don't think this version of it is anywhere near happening, which because like this version of it, these images that leaked, because I think they leaked. Mm-hmm. Let's see, uploaded some time ago to artist Michael Krinsky's ArtStation page. Oh, they're not leaked. So a tweet posted last night by @LostMediaBusters has already got blah blah blah. Taking a look, yeah, there's some original Ghostbusters, but then these weird ghosts with proton packs. Like there's three ghosts and one what looks like a goblin. I dressed as Ghostbusters.
Mm-hmm.
Ghost world catching ghosts, I guess. I don't.
Let me read you what there is about the animated series here. Bill Cannon was talking about Frozen Empire, but then talked a little bit about the animated series. He said, "I just watched an entire art presentation for the show. I've seen the sets and the environments, and I just saw my first glimpse at a world of supernatural characters as realized by our brilliant creative team. All I can say is that the work is being done as we speak. It's in full development. Scripts are being written. Art is being created, and it's a great time to be a Ghostbuster." And then it goes on to say, "Keenan, along with filmmaking partner Ghostbusters Afterlife director Jason Reitman, will serve as executive producer on the upcoming Netflix series, with Reitman previously confirming that the franchise's return to animation will, quote, navigate an unexplored era and decade of Ghostbusters canon."
Hmm.
So that could be the future. That could be between Ghostbusters 2 and Afterlife. I don't know.
Yeah, this another article that I just found for this is from January 7th of last year of 2023. There's I think this is Gil Keenan and Jason Reitman standing in front of it. And it's an image of the No Ghost logo with Slimer busting through it, but it's RGB Slimer.
Okay.
I might be on the right track, but instead of it being a continuation from Frozen Empire, it's like an unexplored decade says to me that we're talking about telling stories in the early 2000s. Because we've got the 80s, we've got the 90s, right?
Yeah, that's true.
But we don't have the early 2000s. We've got the 2010s now, right? Going into the 2020s with these newer movies. So the unexplored decade is 2000 to 2010 sort of thing. Actually, I would say even like 2005 to 2015 would probably be more accurate, because Extreme Ghostbusters is like kind of right up on the 2000, right? What is it? It's like 98, 99?
Yeah. It was, I think, 97 it came out. Yeah, it was about a year. Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah. Yeah. That would be interesting. It would be interesting for them to just sort of go back and you know. But if this image is an indicator of what the sort of the source material is, like, then it looks like maybe it is real Ghostbusters. Or they're just using that art style. But I don't know. There's sort of an aspect of real Ghostbusters where it's like, well, it is like canon in a way, but it's also not. And like, is... the first movie is canon to real Ghostbusters, because what's the episode with the evil Ghostbusters, with the ghost Ghostbusters?
Oh my god, it's like Ghost Smashers or something.
Yeah, something like
that. Yeah, I know you, what
know,
you mean.
You know the one that I'm talking about, where
they're like the green ones, from, where they're in the flight suits. Yeah,
yeah, they're suits from the original movie that. Right. Peter was supposed to destroy. He puts the he shoves them behind the containment unit, and
it's not ghost. No, ghosts are us.
Gonna
be crazy now. I gotta look this up.
And then they basically ghosts get into them, and then start trying to capture the Ghostbusters, wreaking all sorts of havoc. So like the original movie is canon to the real Ghostbusters timeline, but not as much vice versa, because obviously Ghostbusters 2 sort of implies that there was no business after Gozer, right? Like, once that happened, everything kind of dried up. They caught all the ghosts that escaped from the containment unit, but then
Citizen Ghost.
It's Citizen Ghost. I thought it was, but I was like, that doesn't sound right. Which is the story of how Slimer ends up a part of the team, right?
Yes.
Classic stuff.
I gotta rewatch the show, man. It's so good.
Right. I have it all. I have all of original Ghostbusters on Netflix or on Apple. Like, I've bought the complete series, so I can go watch it anytime. But
I have that Firehouse box set.
Nice. I regret not buying that. But I checked today to see if Extreme Ghostbusters, because of the DVD release, I was hoping that it would be on the Apple store, right? That I'd be able to buy it, but it is not.
Dude, it's so weird. Not. They were releasing each week one episode of Extreme Ghostbusters on the official Ghostbusters YouTube channel. And then, like, they got, there's 40 episodes total. They got to about like 27 or 28, and then they just stopped for a while. And then they started releasing them on like another like side YouTube channel, and it picked up from where the last one let off. And then they took all of them off the Ghostbusters. Like, all of them are down now. And it's like, why? And they were on Hulu for a little while, but like, it's just weird that they put them up and then took them all down. It's like, okay. I guess it's because they release them on DVD. They're like, all right, well, if they're not available to watch for free, maybe just people will go buy them. But I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. They seem to have a partnership with Netflix, right? Because Sony doesn't have their own platform. So, I wouldn't be surprised if at some point we see them show up there, and there might just be some rights stuff that they're waiting for it to lapse. In Canada, Extreme Ghostbusters used to be available on the CTV app, like on their streaming platform, which CTV is one of like our major networks up here. It was such a weird place for it to be, because most people don't even realize that that network has its own app. And that the content that's on it is stuff that may not actually be like airing on TV, because there's a bunch of like legacy content on right now. I checked again this morning to see what was on it. You can stream all five seasons of Ghostbusters on it, as well as the first movie, as well as the 2016 movie, but not Ghostbusters 2 and not Afterlife.
Okay. So,
it's
and not
very,
Extreme
it's,
Ghostbusters.
And not Extreme Ghostbusters. They took it off. So what that usually means is that the rights have lapsed, and like whatever deal they had has ended. And it might just be a matter of like the timing of it makes a lot of sense. If it's not on those platforms anymore, it's not on Hulu, it's not on YouTube, it's not on CTV. And yet like they've just released the DVD. Like, that says to me that like the rights lapsed for whoever had whatever deal they had, distribution deals that they had made. And So now it's just probably sitting in limbo until they make another deal that shows up somewhere. I really wish that Netflix or somebody would Netflix used to be so good about this. Like Netflix used to have so much great, like older content, like classic shows. And then they started making their own stuff. And so now that's their focus. And there's way less of it there. Community used to all be on Netflix. But as of April 1st, I mean, it's still there right now. But as of April 1st, it leaves Netflix. And in the US, it goes to Peacock. In Canada, I don't know where it goes. I don't know if it ends up anywhere. And that's a real problem for me because that's my favorite TV show. So I was like, I got to figure out what I'm going to do. It's like I might be putting that the complete series Blu-ray on my wish list for my birthday, but I should anyways because it's full of like audio commentaries and stuff that obviously Netflix.
Oh, cool. Okay.
But this stuff just happens all the time. This is the problem with the digital streaming future, right? Is that like you don't own any of the content. You don't technically own anything. Even the stuff that you have purchased, you have spent money on a la carte. In the Apple, like the Apple TV store, whatever it's called now, because it used to be the iTunes store. You don't own the ability to have that in perpetuity. They can just take it away. They can just take it away from you. If you have it downloaded, they can't take the download away from you. So as long as you keep your downloads, you'll always have it. But I remember I bought Pacific Rim, the soundtrack for Pacific Rim, and I went to re-download it on a new device at one point, and it was like, not available. Like my download of it was not available. It was, you can't download this anymore. It's not available for download. So I was like, but I can stream it off of my phone. Like I can play it off of my phone. It's like, well, it's downloaded on my phone, but I couldn't download it onto my computer or something. And so I looked into it and there was a new version of the album there's a song at the end of the movie, the end of Pacific Rim. That's like an actual song, right? It's not part of the score. It's like an actual like rock song. Right. And in the original release of the album, it wasn't included, but then in a subsequent release, it was like, cause originally it had been released as a single on its own, but then they did another version of the album where they included the whole score and then that song as well. So they took the old version of the score off of iTunes and replaced it with this new one. But if you bought the old one, you just didn't have it anymore. It just didn't exist anymore. And I had to rebuy the album in order to be able to download it again, which really pissed me off. That was the moment when I had sort of determined, like, I'm just going to give them a subscription fee. I'll just get Apple Music rather get Spotify or whatever. Cause it was like, there's no point in me buying these things a la carte. They can take them away. So now I only do it if something is not available on Apple Music, like the Final Fantasy 16 soundtrack, which I had to spend $45 on because it's a very big soundtrack. But yeah, all of that stuff, though, like everything with streaming is just like, it's all in your terms of service. People get mad about it. People are like, you can't take that away. And it's like, they can do whatever they want. Actually, you didn't even bother to read.
I just had this conversation with my parents yesterday. Yeah. Like, everything's in that agreement that you zoomed right by.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You scroll past it and they let you know, right up front. Hey, you don't actually own any of this digital content. We are basically leasing it to you and we can revoke the lease whenever we feel like it. So physical media.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. God. Yeah.
You know, but the problem with physical media is that all of the ways that we have of playing physical media eventually break. So even your 4K Blu-ray players and stuff like that, like they have mechanical components in them. And when they stop making Blu-ray players, this is the problem with VHS now, right? Is that like, there's only a handful of companies that still manufacture VHS cassette players.
Yeah.
And now a VCR is like $200, right?
You couldn't give them away a few years ago.
Yeah, because it's really just like specialists who buy them nowadays.
Yep.
And they're not manufactured on scale, so you know, like that means that they just basically, they only kind of half exist at this point. And that'll happen with Blu-ray players, it'll happen with DVD players, it'll happen eventually. And then our physical media just kind of sits there and it's like, well, you need something to play this, but I don't know. That's why I bought a PlayStation 5 with a disc drive. Disc drive. So that I can play 4K Blu-rays and stuff. But I think we're done talking about Ghostbusters at this point. I think that this sort of signals that, right? Any parting thoughts, any final thoughts before we wrap up the episode?
Please give us more Ghostbusters.
Please give us more Ghostbusters. And if you don't, we're going to take it.
Yeah, by force.
We're
going to come.
We're going to take it. Yeah. Give us more Ghostbusters. More, please. We like it when they do bust the ghosts, because it does feel
good. Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. Please, more Ghostbusters. Immediately, and also in perpetuity. And
I think this is a reasonable demand.
I think so. I think like at any cost, any expense, I don't care. The human cost, the fiscal, none of it matters to me. I just want more Ghostbusters. And you can give it to us, damn it. The movie is not making a lot of money right now, so everybody please go see it again, and then see it again at least one more time. So that's three times that you have to see it. I've seen it twice, which means I have to go see it one more time, but I will probably go see it two more times. I really want to go see it in IMAX, and that means I got to go see it like this week, because if I don't go see it this week by Thursday, all of the screens will be taken over by Godzilla, right? So not that I'm complaining. I want to see Godzilla in IMAX as well. But yeah, actually, that means like basically I got it tomorrow. I think. I don't know. I got to figure that out.
I'm going tomorrow too for that. Well, I'm going tomorrow because I want the ecto cooler before it's gone, but.
Yeah. Go support this movie. It's a very good movie. I hope that if you haven't seen it and you listen to this whole episode, that we've convinced you that it's a lot of fun. That it's very good. I know that we had a lot of like critical things to say about it, but that's just, you know, because we're discussing it. It really is very, very good. It's a very good movie.
None of these things are really hurting my enjoyment personally of this movie. They are things I noticed, but like I don't care, they're not gonna bother me.
This is not a Rise of Skywalker, you know, like
oh
like,
no
it's not like there are things in the movie that I have that I take issue with that like actively, you know, hurt my viewing of the film. There are just something if anything the problem is that there's not enough of the movie. You know, it should either be a TV series or, you know, we need an uncut version with all of those scenes restored. Go see Ghostbusters Frozen Empire. Subscribe to this podcast. Give your money to Sony and to us, but not in that order. Give us money first on patreon.com/thunderquack. We didn't do the break in the middle where I promo the Patreon. So do that and get access to exclusive podcasts and all of that other stuff. You guys know the deal. I don't know if we're getting any new listeners off this episode. If we are, we have a Patreon at patreon.com/thunderquack, and there's like exclusive podcasts and bonus episodes and early access and all sorts of stuff like that. So go check that out and support us. That would be awesome. That's it for this episode. Thank you, Joe, for hanging out and talking about Ghostbusters. I know it's a real trial for you. It's very difficult for you to speak.
Don't you forget which way the favor is going on this one, Michael.
Yeah. Yeah. And thank you, everybody, for humoring us and allowing us this space. You know, I mean, like, it's so rare that a couple of white guys in their 30s get to talk about geeky things.
Yeah.
I'm so grateful that we have this space to do it in. With that said, thank you guys for listening. Thanks for hanging out. Thanks for supporting us on Patreon. We will be back next week with all the news and, you know, other stuff. We're going to talk a lot about X-Men 97 next week. That's my promise to you guys. I have lots to say on that one. So we'll be back next week. We will see you then. Stay frosty.